Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Stone Chapel Podcast. I'm David Capes. Last time we talked to Reuben Zimmerman, the University of Mainz, he was talking about parables. And so today, Reuben is back, maybe part two, we could call this, where we continue our discussion about the parables of Jesus. If you didn't hear part one, please do go back and listen. It's about 20 minutes long. It'd be worth your time. Today, we're going to be looking at two parables, the parable of the mustard seed that you find in the Synoptic Gospels, and the parable of the dying grain in the Gospel of John. There's a lot more to these parables than you might imagine. So today, Reuben Zimmerman on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
I'm Reuben Zimmerman. I'm professor at the Johannes Gutenberg University Mainz in Germany, and I'm teaching New Testament.
Dr. Reuben Zimmerman. Reuben, great to see you. Welcome back to the Stone Chapel Podcast.
I'm happy to be here again.
Well, you've been resident with us for about a week. I wish it had been a month or maybe 6 months.
I really enjoyed the time, so thanks for the invitation, yes. Yeah.
In our last podcast, we gave a little bit of background and history to you, so we'll not repeat that again today. But we talked about your book in that podcast called Puzzling the Parables of Jesus, Methods and Interpretations. It's a very fine book published by Fortress Press. It's also available in our library for those who want to check it out, or you can get your own copy. It's available in Spanish as well and in German. Hey, today we're going to be looking at two parables as kind of emblematic of your method and how you both decide, yes, that's a parable. And then on the second account, how do you go about interpreting the meaning of the parable? So we're going to take two parables that are fairly well known. The first one is better known probably than the second, but it's the parable of the mustard seed. It's in Matthew chapter 13, verses 31 and following. So I'm going to read it, and then we're going to discuss it together. And he, Jesus, put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all the seeds, but when it has grown, it is the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. All right, is that a parable?
Yes, it's already named in the Greek and biblical text as a parable. So I put before them another parable. And yeah. So this is a parabole. The Greek term is used here. So we know from the evangelist that this is meant to be a parable.
Yeah, and it meets your criteria as well.
That's right. True. And I also suggested from my criteria that there might be an integrative method how to read the parables. And so I think we should pay attention to the text, the narration itself, and then to the reality. What's going on there? What do we learn about mustard? What do we know about mustard seeds in antiquity? And then the tradition. So what I call exploring stock metaphors and symbols, because it is a metaphorical text, and mostly it refers to other metaphors already known in the Bible. Mm. And finally, meaning. So what is the meaning? What I do not want to limit or narrow down to one single meaning, but so I said it's more an opening up horizons of interpretations. These are the four steps. And if we have a look at the mustard seed here, we realize it is a very short text, but still something happens. There's someone who took it, sowed it in his field. And it grows up at the end. So there is a development, and also birds of the air come and make nests. So yeah, you can realize there is a whole process of growing and developing of this mustard seed. At the same time, it's a sharp contrast between the smallest of the seeds. And when it has grown, it will be the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree. This contrast is important. That's in the core of this little narrative.
some people have said to me, well, you know, is the mustard seed really the smallest of all seeds? Isn't that a problem with this parable? Because Jesus probably knew that there were smaller seeds than the mustard seed. Now, I'm assuming that it's a standard mustard plant, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's some other plant.
If you have a closer look at reality, according to ancient agrarian handbooks and things like that, so we realize there are three different types of mustard. The yellow mustard and the black mustard and also the white mustard. And there are different sizes also of the seeds. And the black mustard has really very small seed. Maybe not the smallest according to our botanic knowledge or knowledge of some maybe Roman agrarian theorists people. But I think in Palestine and according to the knowledge of the ordinary people, that was known as a very small seed.
Yeah. So the small seed doesn't stay small. Something happens when it goes into the earth.
Yes, the process of growing is important. It's not the only parable on growing. Mm. So we also have the self-growing wheat and seeds. And so we also draw our attention to the dying grain, which is also something which develops. And so growing parables also form some kind of group of parables. But let us stay with this parable here, and we realize that it becomes a shrub or bush. And that's also can be testified by many sources that there were a lot of mustard bushes around the Sea of Galilee in antiquity. And they are still there now. And also,
really?
For instance, scholars like Dahlmann, who
Gustav Dahlmann
at some place, he said, oh, there are a lot of mustard bushes up to 3 meters.
So that's about 10 feet.
Yeah, right? Yes. Yeah. It's quite high, but it's not becomes a tree. So these only bushes. So we realize, why does Matthew refer to a tree here? And there are no mustard trees anywhere. And that brings me to the third approach, what I call exploring stock metaphors. And in that kind, we first realize that this mustard is not used in Hebrew Bible as some important plant. We find the cedar, the oak tree, or many other important plants, but not mustard. And so that's also a signal that Jesus had an eye for the ordinary and not for the important, for instance, fig tree or vineyard, something like that. Right. But the must just maybe a weed at the lake.
At one level, maybe some people would try to pull it out of the garden because they didn't want it there.
But there are still some references which can be brought here where the tree becomes a space for the birds of the air. And that's in apocalyptic writings, for instance, in Daniel or Ezekiel, used for a political symbol, for Nebuchadnezzar, for instance. Ah. And so this, what we call the tree of the world, demonstrates an empire. And this is brought down, and a new tree will be growing. And in this new tree, the birds of the air will nest. So that might be a reference to Ezekiel 17, for instance, a reference of hope. So I would say this political aspect is also at stake here.
And so perhaps then, and this is probably a new thought for some people, that what Jesus is talking about here is the kingdom of heaven, in a way taking the place of empire. Maybe the Roman Empire, which was the empire that they knew at that time.
Of course, the Romans were everywhere in Palestine and also as a military power. And also they had a lot of also violence on the people, not only in the Jewish war, but also before it was a province.
Yeah.
And so I think the people suffered by this military power of the empire. And so it could be also something which is a sermon on of hope to see, oh, there will be a time coming when even this empire has not any power anymore. At the moment, maybe Jesus followers, the group of the disciples, are very small, like this mustard seed, but the time is coming. So it's there's what we call the eschatological aspect. So yes. There is something you can hope for.
It's a really interesting reading of that parable. Now, before we go, is there anything else that we need to say about that parable before we move on to the parable of the dying seed?
Yes, I think there are different ways of reading. So the political reading is only one of them, but it's also an encouragement, for instance, for the people and also for the individual. That if you feel small and weak, then you are encouraged that something can happen if you stay in the faith.
That's a great reading. I've loved this parable for so long, and it just reminds me that what we're part of as Christians, as followers of Jesus, we're not part of something small and insignificant. It started that way in the backwater of Nazareth. It started as a small thing, but it has filled the earth, hasn't it? I mean, there are more Christians on this planet than there are probably any other religion. It's not enough. I mean, we still have the mandate to go make disciples of the nations, but it has spread its wings a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, at the moment in Europe, at least, and also in Germany, there's a decreasing number of Christians. So according to the countings, it's only half belong to a church officially. And so some of the next generation, my children, sometimes also felt like being a small number, going to church and service. Yeah. And so it might also encourage once again.
Yeah, we might find that encouragement today in Europe and in the United States. Well, that's a fascinating reading. In the time that we have left, let's shift and let's talk about the parable of the, again, an agricultural parable, but here, the parable of the dying grain in John's Gospel. It's John chapter 12, beginning in verses 23 and 24. Jesus answered them, "The hour is come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly I tell you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit."
Many scholars do not include John as the source for parables. But I think according to the criteria that can be said, it's a metaphor. It's something which has to do with Jesus, but also with agriculture. Mm-hmm. And it's also a description of a grain which grows up and bears fruit.
Just a single seed, right?
Yes, that's true. And so I think what is not so known, if we go to the second approach, the reality that people in antiquity thought that this seed has to die to grow up again. Dying is not something which is symbolically meaning, but it's a natural meaning. So we find this in Plutarch and in other sources to say, oh, the seed must rotten before new life can come out. And in that way, this is not a symbolic part of the parable. It's a realistic part. And therefore, it even fits more to the death and resurrection of Jesus. And we know from Paul that he also uses this agriculture metaphor in 1 Corinthians 15.
Oh, that's right.
To talk about the dying grain, and then it's coming up again. That's daily life experience for the people. And at the same time, they can understand what is difficult to understand, that Jesus is dying and was dying. And there's a need of dying in order to give new life. And this is to be learned with this parable. On the other hand, these agricultural cults were also well known in the mystic cults, mysterious cults in that time. For instance, the Eleusis myth about Persephone, and also, and there, heir of the grain played an important role. And for instance, in Isis and Osiris cult, we also find what we call the Osiris mummies. they put grain in a mummy, and after a certain period of time, when the feast started, then the grain grew out of the mummy.
Ah.
And they put it in the streets and say, oh, look, there's new life from the mummy. And so the people knew that. And I think the framing of this chapter 12 is about the Greeks.
Oh, that's right. They come to Jesus.
Come to Jesus, want to learn about him. And so there might be a reference also to this mysterious cults. But Jesus, of course, or that's the message, says, oh, it's not the cult, but it's Jesus who gives life.
Yeah. Fascinating. First of all, I'm grateful that you are moving against the grain here in English of scholarship, who by and large ignore John when it comes to parables. They say the Johannine Jesus, or the Jesus in John's gospel, is not really a parable-telling fellow because he doesn't include any of the parables in the synoptics, and there's other reasons as well. But it seems to me that this certainly fits your criteria of what a parable is.
And it's not all about the criteria, but also John was excluded because of the historical Jesus research. Mm. Most scholars think it's the latest gospel, and has preserved only a little about the historical Jesus. But there are also scholars like Paul Anderson, for instance, who think John might be seen on the same level as Mark. It can be seen like that, but at the end, I also think John at least has preserved memories on the historical Jesus. And therefore, it cannot be excluded.
Yeah.
And there are very fine parables, for instance, also in John 16:21, the childbearing woman. It's told about a woman who is expecting and has pain. And then after giving birth, it turns into joy. So it's a daily life experience also. The people did not go to a hospital in that time, but they heard that maybe the mothers crying out during childbirth and the birth pains and so on, that the people had a clear notion about that. And then this still is a something realistic scene, which in the context of the farewell discourse, of course, is transferred once again to the disciples who ask about, have pain that Jesus is not here and so on. And so once again, a realistic daily life scene is transferred to a religious sphere. And so it's a parable.
Here, there seems to be a real apocalyptic sort of center. It begins by saying that the hour is come for the Son of Man to be glorified. So we are talking eschatology. We're talking the death of Jesus. We're talking the resurrection of Jesus. And that image of the dying and rising grain is just a perfect way of sort of depicting what is going to happen to him. Now, the disciples are clearly still puzzled by that because they don't see Jesus dying. They see Jesus instead leading the charge for the kingdom of God. So this is one way, I think, of him describing what is truly going to be in the near future for them, and they needed to see that.
Yeah, so as you said, there are different avenues of interpretation also here. And I would fully agree that there is a Christological interpretation of this text, because a man has come into the world, it said, and that's also in the parable itself. And so who is this? That's Jesus, of course, who is born into the world.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, as you mentioned, the eschatological perspective and the people, that the disciples who do not understand why Jesus must have died and so on. And there's also maybe another interpretation which focuses the women, because it's it's obvious that this is an experience which, of course, maybe also from an observer point of view, also the husband or father can be part of that, but it's more a women experience. And that's also women always play an important role in John. So there are among men, there are a lot of ambiguous believers like Nicodemus and Thomas and so on. But women are always referred to as the true believers. For instance, the Samaritan woman and also Martha and Mary, John 11. Mm-hmm. And so this childbearing woman is also an interesting aspect among this positive notion of women.
And then the very first persons to the tomb are those to encounter Jesus is a woman, Mary Magdalene.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So women occupying such a great role. Well, we've got to call this to quit, but it's been a delight to have you here at the library and to be able to share this time with you today here on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for this talk.
Thanks to Reuben Zimmerman for being with us today on the Stone Chapel Podcast. I wish I'd had more time, especially to talk about the parable of the dying grain. I had not considered that a parable before, but now I'm convinced that it is. And stand by, too, for a nugget of wisdom from Reuben's coming up. Thanks to Kathy Capes for editing this podcast and working carefully on the transcript. Thanks to Phil Keggy for our music. If you enjoy the podcast, if you get something out of it, please give us a 5-star rating. We want you to share it, too, with a friend that you know that might be interested in the content of what we're doing. We do great theology, and we try to bring to you some cutting-edge ministry opportunities. We're so grateful to all of our guests for coming up. We are approaching our 200th podcast. It's going to be coming up later this year. We'll have some sort of a celebration, hats and horns, that kind of stuff. But until next time, this is David Capes with the Stone Chapel Podcast. Thanks for listening.
The parable teaches us that God reveals himself in daily life experience. So open your eyes to discover God's work.